Why is it some women don't have kids? Is it because they're not loving enough? Or is it because they're not lovable enough? I'm Emma Bracon, and I'm talking to Rosemary Agonito, author of The Last Taboo, Saying No to Motherhood. So plop down on that expensive white sofa, pour yourself a tall glass of the good stuff, and let's figure out this child-free life on Through the Eyes of Women, coming up next on KHSU.
Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program for, about, and by women. News and interviews concerning the lives and times of women, local, national, and international.
Until about 50 years ago, having kids wasn't something to deliberate. Sure as losing your first set of teeth, making babies was a thing that was going to happen, unless you're a victim of circumstance. Barren, too ugly, or too unpleasant to attract a mate. Today, reproduction is truly a choice, and maybe for the first time, parenthood is but one path in this choose-your-own-adventure we call life. Of course, this is still a pretty radical new concept, so we have a radical new book, The Last Taboo, Saying No to Motherhood, and we've got its author, Rosemary Agonito. Hello, Rosemary. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Hi, Emma. Good to be here.
So first question for you, Rosemary. Before I even open this book, I'm thinking that even in 2014, there are parts of planet Earth where you could possibly be literally executed for presenting these thoughts. What do you say?
Yes, I'm sure that's true. But that's sad because women really need the choice. And while it's true that in some parts of the world I would be executed, when I was writing this book, my husband warned me that I would not have a friend left in the world when this book came out. And I
not
also,
even one?
Well, it's turned out that I do still have a few. But I also got some nasty letters from publishers. One agent wrote and said, no one will ever publish this book. But fortunately, someone did choose to. So it is a controversial topic, but I think very important.
And these rejections were that adamant. They weren't the boilerplate rejection letters.
Some were, but others really, took me to task, subtly or overtly, for the topic. Because it's still not acceptable, I think, to attack motherhood or mothers or seeming to attack mothers. And I should say before we start, Emma, that really the book is not an attack on mother. I am one myself, by the way. I have two children. But what I do is look at the negative side of motherhood. And I do address this motherhood requirement, this notion that even in this day and age, women are still thought to be not real women unless they have babies.
And when we're talking about parenthood and these decisions, we really are talking about motherhood, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
And why is it that? Why don't we concern ourselves with a man's choice to procreate and whether or not, George Clooney will have somebody to take care of him when he's old?
Well, because I think we see this as the role of women. We see motherhood as the mission of women. And I think regardless of whatever else women do, we still believe that if they're not mothers, they're not somehow real women. So I think with men have babies or not, it's not a big issue. But if women don't have babies, they've somehow failed to fulfill their mission in life. I have a little story that I tell in the book about a 60-minute interview of Helen Mirren. And it was a wonderful interview. They talked about all her accomplishments, her acting, directing, her Academy Award, her world travel. And at the end of the interview, Morley Safer asked the question that no man would ever be asked, but aren't you sorry you never had children? And she said, I'm glad I never had children. And he said, but why? He was very befuddled. Because I've had my freedom, she said. So regardless of what women do, there's still this idea that they're somehow missing out if they don't have children. It's seen as women's mission.
And when we're talking about a child-free woman, what is a child-free woman? Do we call an 18-year-old a child-free woman?
No, I think when we use the word child-free, there's actually a child-free movement among women, and it's a choice. It's seen as women who have chosen not to be free or who, through circumstances, have not had children. There are child-free women who wish they could have children, but for one reason or another can't.
Yes. Where do we put them in the conversation when we're talking about these women who aren't doing their duty? What about the women who don't have an option?
Well, again, I've seen many interviews of these women and research among them, and they will tell you that whether it is a problem that they have no control over or whether it's a choice, they still are constantly confronted with this idea that somehow they're not quite right, they're missing out. There's an incredible amount of pressure on women who don't have children for whatever reason, and the implication is always there that somehow they've missed out on something very fundamental in a woman's life.
Why is that? Why is my choice as to whether I'm going to be a mother so important to so many people who have never met me and will never meet me?
Well, I think it's a historical phenomenon. It's so ingrained in us that woman's mission is to have babies. What is the earliest thing we do with little girls when they're born? We give them dolls, and we proceed from that point on to just inculcate in them this notion that they're little mothers and they're going to grow up to be big mothers. It's just so ingrained. Look, historically, there was a time when reproduction was necessary because of a very high childbirth rate or because of a nomadic tribal existence. That world no longer exists for most women. Now we have contraception, which we didn't have through much of history, or at least we had some kind of very primitive contraception. But now we have contraception, and women have a choice. But we still have these old ingrained ideas that this is woman's mission in life, and we can't seem to get rid of that.
Everybody seems to want in on the decision. We've got politicians and religious leaders and our entertainment media all urging us that this is a really good idea and a good and important, necessary thing to do.
Well, I'm so glad you raised that. The fact that politicians, by the way, who think government should stay out of our lives, think nothing of pressuring women or trying to pass laws that require women to have babies that they don't want or they can't afford. I think that is a symptom of this notion that having babies is so important to women. And, I mean, there's just a whole phenomena out there of politicians and others who think there's something terribly wrong if women aren't doing that, which is kind of crazy in the era of climate change that we're living through. The world is overpopulated, and we don't talk about that very much. We talk about using the right light bulbs, and we talk about carbon pollution and acidified oceans. We avoid talking about the bottom line, which is there are too many people in the world. We've long since, according to scientists, passed sustainability. We no longer can provide for all the people in the world. Look, we produce 1 billion people, 1 billion more people on Earth, roughly every 12 years. That's just incredible. But politicians somehow don't seem to focus on that. They focus on the traditional idea that women should be having babies.
And we even entertain legislation that would allow an employer to fire an employee, female employee, obviously, just for using birth control.
That's right. Isn't that madness? You know, again, that's symptomatic of how far we're willing to go with this. Woman's mission is to have babies. And the fact that we live supposedly in a country that separates church and state, and yet employers can bring their own religion to bear on what women do or don't do relative to their reproductive faculties is just mind-boggling.
And then seemingly on the other end of the spectrum, we've got employers like Apple and Facebook who are apparently offering to help their women employees with freezing their eggs and offering to pay for it. Why do they care?
And again, here are the extremes to which we're willing to go. Freezing eggs, artificial insemination. I've known women who have spent years and years and tens of thousands of dollars trying to have babies because for some reason they've had problems with their fertility. That is symptomatic still of the same phenomena, you know, that we're willing to subsidize such extremes because we think it's so utterly important that women have babies. So, you know, they're two sides of the same coin, I think, the paying for the freezing and not paying for contraception.
Yeah, it does seem like the same coin, doesn't it?
Yes.
So, once again, this is coming from so many different directions. It's coming from politics. It's coming from religion. It's coming from the media. It's coming from strangers on the street telling us that this is something that we should do and that we are definitely going to enjoy. What makes them so certain?
Well, you know, you're right. And we have all these myths that we propagate to encourage women to have babies. For example, the myth that children bring couples together. People believe that, but it's a myth. If you look at the data, the most stressful, disruptive period in a relationship is the birth of a child. Twice as many women said their marriages changed for the worst after having children. And there are just so many of these myths that women with children are happier than women without children. We have extensive data that shows that child-free couples enjoy a higher level of marital satisfaction than those with children. The empty nest syndrome, this belief that mothers suffer from loneliness, uselessness, and depression when children leave home. Again, the research shows the exact opposite is true, that when empty nest mothers are asked, do you wish you still had children at home? Half of them say definitely no, and only 5% say that they unequivocally wish their children were still home. Well, we could go on and on. These myths are propagated to convince women not only that they should do it, but that it's, you know, it's just wonderful if you do it. Everything good will happen to you. And the research does not bear that out.
You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Brecon, and we're talking to Rosemary Agonito, author of The Last Taboo, Saying No to Motherhood. Rosemary, we're talking about some of the less adorable realities of being a parent. We've talked about the toll that it can take on the relationship with the father. What are some other things that motherhood can do to a woman's life, like, for instance, her career?
Oh, there's no question. And part of the reason I wrote the book is because I have long experience with displaced homemakers, women in poverty. I ran a consulting training firm on gender issues, and I've worked with women at all levels, executive women, displaced homemaker women in poverty, and damage to their careers, to their self-identity is profound. I mean, I've seen these women later in life who look back on their lives and say, you know, what did I do? If only I had known then what I know now. The choices we make, well, I put choices in quotes because they're not really choices. You know, if we really had the choice, I look back at my own life. I came from an immigrant Italian background, and it was just a given that you had children. That was not even open for discussion. It just was a given. And so I, you know, proceeded to do what was expected of me. We don't give women the choice, and then they pay a terrific price in terms of developing themselves. Because after all, what does motherhood require? Motherhood requires self-sacrifice. Underline the word self-sacrifice. And it's not, you know, one of the other myths is that women can only be fulfilled by having children. But when you have children, it's required that you self-sacrifice for the child, that the child always comes first. You can't make the most simple decision without factoring in the child. Do I go to the store? Do I take the child? Do I leave the child home? Who do I leave the child with? You know, and it's just on and on. Every decision requires that a woman sacrifice. And her career, her work, and by the way, I think work is terribly important. I think work is what defines us. Work is how we do in life what is good for us to do.
In what sense? In what ways is our work good for us?
Because work is how we express ourselves day to day. It's how we create. It's how we make ourselves a place in the world. It's absolutely critical, I think, for all of us to affirm the self in the world. And the way that we typically do that is through work. Now, some people may say, well, raising children is work. And in a sense, it is, but it's work that requires you to give up yourself. It's work that requires you to think of others first. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I am saying that when we're required to do that, and it's not a choice that we make, we're conditioned to do it, that's not a good thing. My talents as an individual need to be developed, and that's what work does. It enables me, or it should enable me, to develop my talents and to express myself in the world. I'm not sure that makes sense, does it?
It does. There's also the ability to support oneself financially. When you give that up, there might be some vulnerability.
Oh, terribly. Think of this. What makes you more vulnerable than the fact that your food, your clothing, your shelter depends on another human being? How free are you in that circumstance so that the woman who is not, or for that matter, the man who is not self-supporting, who does not have the means, the money of their own to support themselves, is utterly dependent on another person? How free can I be if I am dependent for my very food, clothing, shelter, and everything else on another human being? So I think that's a very important issue for women, and one that I have seen so many women come to realize later in life when, you know, they gave up their lives to have children and to raise them, only to find that later in life they are economically without means, that they're utterly dependent on someone else, and maybe that someone else flies the coop. After all, what's the divorce rate in this country? 50%. That's pretty darn high. The financial side of it is very important as well. You're right, Emma.
What are some other realities of motherhood? What does it do to her health?
Well, I think she cannot develop herself. As I mentioned a moment ago, I think that we develop our talents. Everybody has something unique in them that they're good at, that they excel in. And if we don't have the opportunity to realize that self in the world, I've seen so many women get to middle age and old age who have such terrible regrets. They say, I never did this. There was a woman I knew who was a wonderful artist as a young woman, and then she left everything to raise a family, and I met her as a displaced homemaker. Husband had left her. She had never developed her talent. She wanted to go back to school to do that, but she didn't have the finances. She was looking for money to do it. So it's a very sad thing, I think, when people, and all of us, I firmly believe, have some kind of talent, some kind of skill, something that we have within us that we need to express. And if we don't do that, that's a tragic loss.
My friend, who is raising a daughter pretty much on her own, wanted me to ask you about what motherhood does to friendships, why we do seem to drift, and we seem to assume that parents aren't going to want to have the occasional round of shots, and child-free people wouldn't be interested in a piece of confetti cake. Are we really so different?
Well, at that I'm not sure about. In what sense did your friend mean that?
Well, for instance, I do not hang out with her often enough. I think that there are assumptions on both sides when somebody has kids. I think that the friends without kids know that the friend with kids is very busy with that little person, and that probably has a lot to do with it. And also, I think maybe a new parent would assume that their single or child-free friends would be a little bit bored with what's going on in their house. So there is some changes that come to friendships when a baby comes into the picture.
Yes. Okay. I see what you're saying. There's absolutely no question about that. I think the whole scenario of your life changes. You are now wrapped up in these little people, and I think there's a natural tendency to feel more comfortable with people who have little people around them, and you have those kinds of things to share. So, yeah, I think that does happen. It does tend to interfere with who you see and who you spend time with. Of course, it's going to depend on the person, but I think we have to be aware of that and not fall into that trap of, I want to be around people who are like me, because we grow better if we're around people who are different than we are, doing different things.
What has the nuclear family model done to parenting and motherhood?
Ah, that's a great question. Throughout much of history, the nuclear family didn't really exist as we know it today. It's a whole new phenomena. The extended family was the reality in most cultures of the world up until the late 19th century, 20th century. Now we have this notion of mom, dad, and the kids, when in fact, in earlier cultures, it was the extended family. And I think that makes motherhood much more difficult, the nuclear family does, because now all the burden falls on one woman. And by the way, it is the woman still who has the burden. Nothing much has changed in that regard. Men have not stepped up, with some exceptions, but men have not stepped up to do their fair share. So the nuclear family really has made motherhood more difficult for women. In the extended family, children had lots of mothers, and some of them were even men. But that's changed, and we've sanctified the nuclear family. And it's just a new phenomena and not a particularly good phenomena for everybody involved.
What is our perception of the woman who says no to motherhood?
Oh, we think she's selfish, right? She's the opposite of the self-sacrificial person who becomes a mother. I think if you talk to women who don't have children, they will tell you that there is always this implication that there's something wrong with them, that they're not real women, they're not good women, they're selfish. And that's true of the mother who puts herself first in any sense. She's the bad mother. So there is this pervasive sense that something is very wrong with women who don't have children, who don't want children. We really need to get over that. And it's just a terrible attitude, I think.
I've heard a lot of interesting suggestions. I've heard highly career-driven. I've also heard highly indulgent. So I guess we're either going to be in the boardroom or the bubble bath all day. I've heard materialistic. We can't have kids because we have white couches. I've heard gay. I've heard cold. I've heard ugly. What is it that is so disturbing to people about a woman who isn't a mother? Why are we so scary?
Again, I think that at the very core of it, it's this idea that that's your mission in life. And if you're not doing that, there's something wrong with you. You're not right. You're selfish, or maybe you're gay. Or I really think it comes down to this fundamental idea that that's what women are created for. That's what women do in life. They have babies. And if they're not doing that, then there is something very wrong. By the way, I have a theory here. I mean, it's no secret. Look, women are still not considered equal to men, right? Throughout recorded history, with some exceptions, from Aristotle on down, women have been seen as less than fully human. And human is defined by rationality, and that's what men have. Now, I have this notion that this somehow connects to this idea that woman's mission in life is to be a mother. Look, if we look at women as breeders, and let's call it what it is, having babies is a biological function, a function we share with animals. So in a subtle, non-conscious way, that shapes our view of women as not fully human. Now, that'll not make me any friends, but I really think that's at the heart of why we are not as women considered equal to men, and why when women don't have babies, they're considered something terribly wrong with them.
So you've had 2 kids, and you've published 9 books, which is a lot more than a lot of people do. What more do you think that you might have done with your life if you did not have those 2 kids?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think I was saved by my husband, who was very unusual in that he was very involved in raising the kids. I was a college professor for years, and I commuted to my job, and so he cooked, he did all the domestic things. But had I not had a husband like that, I could never have written those 9 books. I could never have been a college professor. I got my PhD after my son was born. I could never have done that without him. So I think I've been fortunate. My case was pretty unusual. So I don't know. But I think there's no question in my mind that I could have done even more had I not had the kids. And I love my kids. I don't want to be misunderstood here. But I think there's no question they are an incredible amount of work. And they're very draining because they take a lot of attention and energy. And it is very hard to do other things.
Boiling it down as we reach the end of our time together, Rosemary, we see the positive side of parenting and motherhood reflected every day in our media and all around us. Now we have this very frank examination of the parts of parenting that are really hard and maybe not so pretty all the time. You've presented us a whole lot of anecdotes that are a little scary. So my final question for you is, how is a woman or a person to process all of the good and bad and decide if mothering is going to be for her?
Well, I think that's very much an individual question. What I've tried to do in this book is, as you say, present the other side so that a woman isn't just faced with the image of childhood as Disney World and fluffy stuffed animals. That's everywhere in the culture. And I've tried to present the other side so that people can make an informed choice. But I think as long as we continue to condition little girls from the time they're born to be mothers, that it's not really going to be a free choice for most women. It's what you do in life. And so part of what I want to do here is also question the fact that motherhood is a requirement. So I've presented the negative side, but I've also tried to argue that it's not a requirement, that we need to step back, and we need to, if we take this on, we take it on with a clear vision of what it's all about and not the sappy image of motherhood that is everywhere in the culture and the media. We need to make it a choice, and I don't think for most people it's a choice yet.
Well, Rosemary, I just want to thank you so much for sharing this point of view and giving us so much to consider, and for being with us on Through the Eyes of Women today. Thank you, Rosemary.
My pleasure, Emma.
You have been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Bracon, and I've been speaking with Rosemary Aganito, author of The Last Taboo, Saying No to Motherhood. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to our executive producer and today's engineer and audio editor, Kathleen Marshall. To listen to this program again in the next 2 weeks, go to khsu.org, click on the web audio, then audio archives. You can also listen to it anytime on Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives, where you can learn more about the show, view the upcoming schedule, or post listener comments. Visit our blog at www.khsuwomen.wordpress.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.